It was only mid-morning, and already Leia felt as though she had a crystal-plast skull, as though the twin suns were blazing through her sandhood and baking her brain in hot, bright light. The Askagians were scattered across the plain, being careful to form no rows or columns that would make the caravan easier for a high-flying surveillance droid to identify. Han rode ahead and off to one side. His pack beasts had become mounts for Chewbacca and the squibs, so he did not have any extra dewbacks to lead. Still, the heat was taking its toll. He was wobbling and bouncing, and occasionally he struggled to stay in the saddle. Leia urged her dewback forward and drew alongside him. With his eyes and face hidden by his goggles and scarf, it was impossible to read his expression. But Leia could tell by the way his shoulders slumped and his chin drooped that he was not doing well. Hey, it hurt to talk. Leia's throat was so dry. Han's dark goggles swung in her direction. The slump vanished from his shoulders, a brave front for her benefit. But his chin continued to droop. Not a good sign. Leia held up a finger while she slipped her water bottle beneath her face coverings and drank. The contents were as hot as calf. You remembering your water? Han displayed the bottle in his hand and nodded listlessly. The distant hiss of a craft in flight sounded behind the caravan, and they both turned to see a wavering sliver of ion efflux creeping across the sky. The vessel itself was not visible, not even as a faint glint, but the length of its ion tail suggested it to be a sizable craft. Probably one of the Chimera's intelligence launches, eavesdropping on local comm traffic. After watching the efflux for a moment, Leia asked, "What do you think? Signal interceptor?" Han shook his head. "The Imperials must have finished searching Anchorhead by now. That's got to be an assault shuttle. Once that shuttle reports we aren't where we're supposed to be, it won't take them long to send a flight of TIEs out on a search grid." An Askagian rode up behind them, arriving with such silence and suddenness that when he spoke, Leia nearly jumped out of her saddle.
"Why are you bunched together like this?"
He gestured at the sky with the spear.
"You make it easier for the sky eyes to see us. Spread out, or Borno will take your mounts and leave you for the white shells."
Leia fell in 20 meters behind Han. Even at that short distance, the heat distortion reduced his shimmering figure to an unrecognizable silhouette, but she would at least be able to tell if he fell out of the saddle or let his mount wander. The plain became rocky and broken, with pockets of soft sand lying between boulders the size of droids. The caravan's progress slowed to a crawl, the gait of the dewbacks growing slow, rhythmic and swaying. Han's rippling figure seemed to twist in the saddle and look back in the direction from which they had come, and Leia knew he was thinking the same thing she was. Those TIEs had to be starting their search grid by now, and when they found the caravan this time, the equipment hanging beneath their cockpits would not be sensors and cameras. They would take action to stop the caravan, and quickly. It soon grew apparent that the dewbacks were better off picking their way without guidance from their riders. With another hour to their destination, and nothing to occupy her thoughts except worries over Han and the Imperials, Leia needed something to keep her mind occupied. She slipped her herding spear into its carrying sleeve and tied her reins to a tethering loop on the saddle, then took her grandmother's journal out of her pocket and began to view entries. It wasn't long before Shmi reported an interesting surprise.
19:17:10. Today I came home to find a Faline waiting on our steps. She was a very rough-looking lady, Annie, and not only because of those narrow eyes and sharp teeth. She had a plasteel box sitting beside her, so I thought she had brought some memory chips for me to clean. I told her she would have to pay in advance. I've been cheated by spacers before, even if they're usually Corellians. But she told me the box was from Coruscant. She apologized for taking so long to get it here and explained that it had been a gift from Qui-Gon Jinn. Annie, I was so excited I forgot all about the box. Here was someone from Coruscant who knew Qui-Gon. That meant she had to know you. But she claimed to be only an errand girl from the Jedi hangars, and said she didn't know anything about temple business.
As the entry ended, Shmi's eyes grew glassy with tears, and Leia was surprised to find her own eyes tearing. It seemed wrong to condemn Anakin for following his dreams, yet those dreams had become a nightmare for the rest of the galaxy. If only Shmi had known what his destiny would be, would she have had the strength to deny her son's help to the Jedi? To make Anakin live out the rest of his life in bondage? It was not a decision Leia felt certain she could have made.
19-19-11. Oh, yes, the box. Inside, there was a message from Qui-Gon explaining that while he and his Padawan waited for the Jedi Council to test you, he had asked someone to start a galaxy-wide holonet search to...
The display clouded with static, and Shmi's voice faded to an inaudible scratch.
18-20-12. Watto behaved very strangely today. When he sent me out to buy his nectarot, he gave me 5 extra trugets to buy some pally wine for us to share. And he insisted I get it from Nanuar, because I should taste the good stuff. I hardly knew what to make of it. It turns out he had heard about the Fahleen's visit, and that she had come on a ship from Coruscant. All he wanted was to hear how you're doing. Well, what he asked was, how many pod races has the boy won? I told them the Jedi don't allow their students to enter pod races, but that you're doing well with your training. I'm sure I wasn't stretching the truth, Ani. And the news seemed to calm Watto. Sometimes I think he really misses you. Though, of course, he won't admit it.
The entry ended, leaving Leia a little perplexed about Shmi's patience with her Toydarian owner. But many relationships were complicated, and she had learned in her work that few beings could be painted without shades of gray. Then, after 4 years of routine entries, Shmi appeared in the display, smiling, as she had not smiled since the box had arrived from Qui-Gon.
17-06-13. A settler came into Watto's today. A great brattle of a man, very gruff and to the point.
Shmi lowered her voice and did a fair imitation of a human male.
I need a set of booster coils for a Sorosub V-24, he said to Watto. And don't try to rob me. I know your reputation.
She slid into a flawless imitation of Watto's gravelly whine.
Then you know I am only an honest business being trying to keep his doors open in this miserable dustbin of a city. And the V-24 is a classic. Those coils are what cost you, if I have any. I've heard Watto use that line 100 times, but there was something about this settler that made me want to help him. A sense of desperation, maybe? Or maybe his proud blue eyes and the way he carried himself. I told Watto we had plenty of booster coils, that I had dusted off a whole stack that morning. Good, the settler said. He looked directly at me, and my knees went weak. The way Amy says hers do whenever she sees Rock or Germ or nearly any boy. I'll take 2 of them.
Shmi began to laugh.
Watto was so angry, he knocked a carton of power cells off the counter, turning to yell at me.
The next few entries were short, consisting mostly of Shmi's ritual of telling Anakin how proud she was of him and how much she loved him. There were also a few mentions of the settler, noting, with obvious disappointment, that Shmi had not seen him again and probably never would, but she was glad to have helped him. About 2 weeks later, Shmi's mood was noticeably brighter.
23-29-15. The settler came back today. He was looking for 50 vaporator condensers. Watto was still so angry about the booster coils that he wouldn't offer a reasonable price, so the settler left. But when Watto sent me for his nectarot, I found the settler waiting outside. He walked with me to Nadwar's. I was a little nervous, but he has a jolly manner that makes him easy to talk to. He asked if I had been punished for helping him, then apologized when I told him about the extra work I had to do cleaning the Navicomputer's memory chip, even though it was really nothing. Then he asked me why I had helped him. Before I knew it, I had admitted the truth. That I had done it because I found him so handsome. He actually blushed. Then he smiled and held his hand out to me. He's a good man, Ani, and it's wonderful to have a new friend. His name is Kleeg. Kleeg Lars.
The droning sound came so faintly that Leia thought the sand had finally fouled the heat vents on the palm diary. Terrified the memory circuits would melt, she thumbed the power key and continued to hear the whine. Then finally looked up to see Han's wavy figure twisted around in his saddle, his dark goggles studying the sky behind her. It was a tie making the noise. The droning faded a few minutes later, and when it wasn't followed by a sonic boom, Leia knew they had escaped detection. Once her vision cleared, Leia activated the timing function on her chronometer. Assuming the tie was flying a search grid, knowing the interval between passes would prove critical, if they were to have any chance at all of evading detection. Han was wobbling more noticeably in his saddle, but remained alert enough to keep drinking. The brown wall of the distant mountains continued to hang on the horizon, and the blue sweep of a mirage still hovered at their base like a floating lake. Below the mirage, there lay a new desert apparition, a writhing stripe of darkness that appeared to have no worldly source. The droning sound returned, this time loudly enough that Leia had no doubt about its nature. She checked her chronometer and discovered the last pass had come 14 minutes ago. Then, shielded her eyes and turned to look. It took a few moments of searching, but she finally found a blue flicker of ion discharge bouncing along low on the horizon, blinking in and out of sight as it was obscured by curtains of rising air. The caravan had one more pass, if they were lucky, before the tie was close enough to see them. Hans Dubek and the ones carrying Chewbacca and the squibs broke into a clumsy gallop and rushed forward, staggering and stumbling. Leia's mount started after the others, but stopped when it discovered it was still tethered to the pack beasts. It began to groan angrily and toss its head. The Askagians began to free their cargo animals, and more Dubaks lurched after Han and the others. Puzzled, and hoping Borno had some plan other than headlong flight, Leia twisted around to release the pack beasts tethered to her own saddle. She had barely undone the second knot before all three creatures broke into a clumsy trot. Leia looked forward again to find the caravan converging ahead, the pack beasts outpacing the mounts. The Askagians weren't far behind, with Chewbacca close on their tails. But Han and the squibs were rapidly losing ground, the squibs remaining on their mount only through acrobatic grace. Han was slumped forward, with both arms wrapped around his Dubak's neck. Leia kicked her heels into her mount's flanks and slapped the side of its neck, trying to urge it toward Han. The creature didn't even seem to feel the blows. Then, the other Dubak started to disappear. The shadow beneath the mirage was rapidly growing wider and steadier, and the Dubaks all seemed to be disappearing about the same distance from it. Not disappearing, but descending. The Dubaks' legs would vanish first, then their bodies, and finally their heads. And as the first Askagians reached the brink, their riders. Then the shadow slid out from beneath the mirage and resolved itself into a broad, deep canyon. Chewbacca reached the rim and followed the Askagians out of sight. A moment later, Han finally slipped out of his saddle. Leia was instantly standing in her stirrups, pulling her scarf down and yelling, "Chewie, wait!" Her parched throat managed a loud croak, not much more. Still, one of the bouncing squibs turned and glanced back. Leia pointed at the spot where Han had fallen. She could no longer tell his body from the rippling stones. Then the squibs leapt out of their saddle, spreading their sand cloaks to catch the air as they dropped. It was no help. One after the other, they hit the ground, were overcome by their momentum, and started bouncing. Leia could have kissed them. Learning from their mistake, she watched for a sandy stretch, then kicked her remaining foot out of the stirrup, pushed off, and covered her head. Her feet sank to the ankle, and she slammed down on her side, the wind leaving her lungs in a single gasp. Leia looked down and found her arm hanging at her side. She tried to lift it and nearly sank to her knees. "Stank! When it rains, it..." She glanced up at the sky and shook her head. "We should be so lucky." Imala came scrambling over, leaping from boulder to boulder. 10 meters behind her, Grease and Sly were pulling Han to a seated position.
Are you crazy? Jumping off a moving dewback?
Imala demanded. At least I didn't try to fly. Leia flopped her limp arm toward the squib. Hold that. Brace yourself. Imala grabbed the offered arm with both hands, then pulled up her feet and let her whole weight drop on Leia's wrist. There was a loud pop, and this time, Leia did sink to her knees. Imala stuck her furry little face in front of Leia and batted her long lashes.
Better?
Leia spoke through clenched teeth. I'm going to kill you. She followed Imala over to the others, where Sly and Grease each had one of Han's arms draped across their shoulders. How is he? She asked.
Heavy,
Grease said.
Grab a leg and let's go.
In a minute, Leia went around and slipped her hand under Han's scarf and felt his pulse. It was shallow and slow. His skin was dry as a stone and nearly as hot. He stopped sweating. That's bad. Leia looked around for something resembling shelter, then finally pointed at the thin sliver of shade behind a large boulder. Help me lay him over there, then find the shady side of a rock for yourselves. The squibs looked doubtful, but did as she instructed, placing him in close to the boulder. The drone of the TIE Stalker arose 30 seconds later and quickly built to a shrill whine. This time, it was close. Still listening to the sound, she raised Han's goggles and opened his cloak. The closures were difficult to work with one hand, then emptied her water bottle onto his face and clothes. Han's eyes opened, glassy and unfocused, and he rasped,
Another bath already?
Just a shower. Unsure whether he was joking or hallucinating, Leia cradled his head in her lap and pulled the water bottle off his belt. Can you drink?
Got a geyser?
A little warm water.
That'll do.
Han grabbed her shoulder to pull himself up, then scowled when she winced.
What happened?
Fast stop, Leia said. I separated my shoulder. Not bad. I can still lift my arm. The whine of the TIE faded. Leia put the water bottles away and called the squibs from their hiding places. But Han didn't want them banging his head on rocks and insisted he could walk on his own. Han lasted almost a dozen steps before his eyes rolled up and he collapsed again. Following the caravan trail across the broken terrain proved more difficult than expected. That close to the ground, the air was so superheated and the reflection of the sun so brilliant that when Leia tried to look for tracks, all she saw was a painful shimmering radiance. Within 3 minutes, they had to stop to rest and drink. Sly pointed away at an angle.
Where's that Wookiee going?
Leia looked in the indicated direction and saw a wavering tower of fur loping across the desert past them. Chewbacca! When he stopped and turned in their direction, she added less loudly, Hurry! He arrived a few moments later, glassy-eyed, roaring with joy and staggering from the heat. Leia checked her chronometer. Chewie, we have 4 minutes before the... Chewie was already throwing Han over his shoulder and turning back toward the canyon. The squibs bounced away after him, and Leia started after them at a slow jog she hoped she could maintain in this heat. Within 2 minutes, she was staggering and gushing sweat. But the curtain of heat shimmer had lifted to reveal the golden walls of a sandrock canyon, descending through the desert floor in a series of stony terraces and shadowy overhangs. Leia's pulse began to pound in her ears. She slowed to a walk. The canyon's rim lay 20 meters ahead. She had plenty of time to reach it, as long as she didn't collapse. Her vision began to darken at the edges. Her shoulder started to throb, then her head was spinning, ears ringing. No, not her ears, her wrist. That chiming was the alarm on her chronometer. 1 minute. Leia's vision narrowed, and she felt like she was suffocating.
Chew.
She couldn't hear her own voice.
Chew.
No good. Chewbacca reached the rim of the canyon and began to grow shorter as he descended a steep slope. Then the squibs disappeared over the edge. The strength left Leia's legs. The ground fell out beneath her. Then her tender shoulder erupted into pain. She felt herself tumble twice, bowling over a pair of small, soft bodies before finally coming to rest against a furry tree trunk of a leg. A faint shrieking filled her ears, and she thought for a moment she had hurt one of the squibs. Then she recognized the sound's steadily rising pitch. The tie had arrived. The tie's approach seemed to take forever. Her vision went from a gray blur to a golden brilliance, and the sound of its engines began to echo off the canyon's far wall. Leia waited, listening to the engine shriek bouncing off the golden walls. Her vision cleared, and she found herself staring down the canyon. She half expected to see the black panels and cockpit sandwich of a TIE fighter screaming around the bend. But this pilot continued to fly the assigned pattern. The pitch of his shrieking engines went from rising to falling. The echoes drifted away up the canyon, and finally the wind vanished altogether. The next sound Leia heard was Sly's angry voice.
Is that the way you repay our help? Trying to kill us? The deal's off,
Grease declared.
You can't be trusted.
Leia pushed herself into a sitting position, then had to lie back down when her head began to spin. Chewbacca's face appeared over her, grumbling. I'm fine. Leia pushed herself to her elbows. I just need water. Chewbacca snatched a water bottle out of Amala's hands and passed it to Leia. She drank greedily. Then, once her head stopped spinning, she sat up and saw the reason the squibs were trying to cancel the deal again. In the bottom of the canyon, hidden in the cool shadows beneath a sand rock overhang and barely visible, was the rear tread of a Jawa sandcrawler. Fifty meters from the overhang, Leia knew something was terribly wrong. The Askagians had stopped just inside the shadows and were milling about on foot, holding their dewback reins in one hand and their weapons in the other, clearly ready to fight or flee, and possibly both on short notice. But it was the smell that told the story. No smell in the galaxy was more unforgettable than that of battle casualties decaying in the heat. Chewbacca groaned at the stench. Me too, Leia said. But I can stand a little retching if it gets Han some shade. As sapped by the heat as Leia and Chewbacca, the squibs did their best to trot ahead and get the first look at the sandcrawler. The squibs reached the cave a dozen paces ahead of Leia and Chewbacca. They shouldered their way through a tangle of plump thighs to the Askagian's front rank, then promptly stopped and yielded their lead. Leia saw why a minute later, when she and Chewbacca joined the group. The floor of the huge cavern was carpeted with snarling Urukais. They were crouching over the bodies of murdered Jawas, or, in a handful of cases, slain stormtroopers, hissing and beating their scaly wings at the encroaching Askagians.
So now we know why the Jawas did not keep their appointment,
Borno said, joining Leia and the others.
The Imperials found them.
Not really, Leia replied. A patrol found them.
I fail to see the difference.
That's right, Leia said. The Imperials didn't find the sandcrawler. They lost a patrol. If the Chimera knew about this, there would already be an intelligence squad down here tearing the sandcrawler apart. Chewbacca nodded, and C-3PO emerged from between two dewbacks.
What a crime! Jawas are certainly no friends of mine, but what those stormtroopers did to them violates war accords as old as the Old Republic itself, and what they did to the droids. Why they find it necessary to kill prisoners is beyond me.
Because they don't understand droids,
Borno said.
Or technology in general.
C-3PO turned to face the Askagian.
I beg your pardon, sir, but in my experience, the Empire has proven quite fond of technology.
He's not talking about the Imperials, 3PO. Leia looked over the droid's shoulder to Borno. Are you thinking sand people?
I believe so, They must have attacked while the stormtroopers were searching the sandcrawler.
He pointed a thick hand toward the sandcrawler's boarding ramp, which was surrounded by a random spray of metal dimples.
Those holes were made by slug throwers.
Leia nodded. Borno, I don't want to be disrespectful to your trading partners, but we have only 9 minutes before the next pass. There's a good chance they'll be directly over the canyon, and I could see...
The tread, of course. I saw it too.
Borno issued a rapid series of orders in Askagian. Leia checked her chronometer. 8 minutes. She motioned the others to follow and led the way to the back of the erosion cave, where the ceiling sloped down to meet the sand, and the area was clear of battle casualties. The air was refreshingly cool, or at least not hot, and almost damp. She used one hand to smooth the place and had Chewbacca put Han there, then began to hand empty water bottles to C-3PO. "Find our dewbacks and refill those from the water bladder," she ordered. "Chewie, see if you can find a suit of stormtrooper armor with a functional cooling unit." Leaving Leia with the one bottle that still contained anything, Chewbacca and C-3PO scurried off to do as she had asked. Leia took 2 gulps of hot water, then raised Han's goggles and used the rest to wet his face and clothes. The color was already coming back to his face, but she needed him to wake up. Drinking was the only way to get fluids into his body short of reattaching the hydration drip, which they no longer had. Leia leaned close to his face. "Listen up, Nerf Herder. I'm tired of doing all the heavy work around here." She kissed him on the lips and began to feel dizzy, and not in the usual way. Her vision narrowed, then Han's eyelids fluttered open, and she willed herself to stay conscious. Leia smiled. "That's better." But his eyes weren't looking at her. They were glassy and vacant, the pupils fixed and dilated. "Han!" She grabbed his shoulder and began to shake him. "Where do you think you're going? Come back here!" As if obeying, a pair of white pinpricks appeared in the depths of his pupils. They rose toward the surface, swelling into tiny balls of pale flame and spilling out over the irises until they completely covered the eyes, 2 tiny suns crackling and hissing in a pair of dead empty sockets. "Han?" Leia's tongue had swollen to twice its size, and the word died rasping in her mouth. She turned to wave Chewbacca over and found the shadows beneath the overhang suddenly as thick as a nebula. The Wookiee's form indistinguishable from dozens of other ghostly silhouettes gliding through the murk. Finally, Leia understood what was happening. "Not another force vision. Please, not this one." A soft crackling arose beneath her, and she forced herself to look down. The white suns were still burning in Han's eye sockets. "Mine." Though the voice was Han's, the tone was not. The tone was hard and sibilant and uncaring.
"Mine."
"No," Leia rasped. "Please."
The white spheres in Han's eyes flared.
"Mine."
A sleepy snarl, Han's sleepy snarl, sounded at Leia's side. Thinking the vision had taken some strange new turn, she glanced over and was baffled to see him lying next to her, encased in a suit of white stormtrooper armor. His head was propped on a rolled sand cloak, and a wall of fur was kneeling beside him. She looked forward, up, again. Han's face continued to hang above her, the white spheres in his eyes now golden and shining more faintly.
"How wonderful!"
The voice was familiar, but it was not Han's. It was far too chirpy and obeisant to be Han's.
"Princess Leia seems to be recovering."
3PO? Leia gasped. "What happened?"
"I'm certainly no medical droid, but it appears you collapsed."
Leia pushed herself up and was surprised to find her own torso encased in white armor. Her injured shoulder was sore, but it held. "What?" She let the question trail off, noticing how cool her body felt, and took the bottle of mineral water. How long have I been unconscious?
We found you 1 standard hour and 23 minutes ago. Master Chewbacca had to fight 3 Urusais.
An hour? Obviously, the Askagians had succeeded in camouflaging the Sandcrawler's presence. Leia glanced out into the cave and found the floor still swarming with Urusais, 3 lying nearby with broken necks. Leia ignored them, and still shaken from her vision. Or was this one only a dream? She turned to Han. How are you feeling?
Awful. Head like a bantha stepped on it.
He jerked a thumb at Chewbacca.
And this fur bag keeps trying to get me to drink stale mud water. I don't care when you mixed it, Han said. It still tastes like mud water.
Chewbacca gestured across the cave floor toward Borno, who was ambling in their direction with a Jawa cradled in the crook of one huge arm.
It appears the Tuskens neglected to kill someone. Isn't that marvelous?
Leia and Han glanced at each other. Then Han said,
I wouldn't put it that way to the Jawa, 3PO.
Borno stopped at the edge of the group, and Leia saw that the Jawa was holding one leg out straight and trying to keep it from moving.
Master Chewbacca wishes to inquire about the Imperials,
C-3PO translated.
They may still be in the area.
Borno relaxed and gave a dismissive wave.
We have not heard any ties in an hour, and no Imperial in the galaxy can find me in these canyons.
Leia exchanged glances with Han. They had both heard similar boasts before. Chewbacca growled another question. After C-3PO translated, Borno shook his head.
We did not come across the moss painting you asked about, or any humans except the dead Imperials.
He cast a pointed glance at the Sandcrawler.
But the squibs would not let us into the upper portions of the Sandcrawler.
Han turned to Leia.
You let them have twilight?
Leia shrugged. We had other things to worry about.
Other things? Han demanded. After all I've been through to get it? After all we've been through? What could be more important than that?
You, Han, Leia said. I told Chewie to take care of you and forget about the squibs.
Well,
for once in his life, Han seemed at a loss for words. Borno reached down with his free hand and spared Leia the exertion of lifting herself to her feet.
We will drop you in Motesta. There is an Imperial deserter there who can be trusted.
Leia's mind flashed on the image of Han's eyes just before the suns had appeared, when the pupils were fixed and dilated. Perhaps the dream had been a vision, and perhaps not. But suddenly, she could not bear the thought of continuing to travel with the Askagians.
Do not be troubled because Gwend was once an Imperial.
Borno grew thoughtful for a moment, then added,
He is the one who helped us come here, and he is helping another tribe come soon. That is why we need the Vaporators.
Leia began to have a sinking feeling. Askagians were not known for their wanderlust, quite the opposite. If another tribe was coming to Tatooine, there was good reason. How soon? Leia was thinking of Wedge's secret mission to Askage, and of the possibility that Mon Mothma would recall Wraith Squadron if she did not hear from Leia before long. After Grand Moff Wilkadin's tour, Borno's jaw dropped.
How did you guess?
The timing seemed close, Leia said. Do you know if they have left Askage yet?
Not Askage, but they have left their village. We will not hear from them again until they reach Tatooine.
Borno studied her carefully, then asked,
They have already committed themselves to payment. Will their ship be waiting?
I hope so. Leia didn't know how else to answer. She didn't know the details of the mission, but after such a bold operation, it wouldn't be unusual for New Republic intelligence to relocate a group of resistance fighters. Leaving them behind would be a virtual death sentence. She laid her hand on Borno's arm. I think I know the transport line they'll be using. I have to contact them anyway, and I'll certainly urge them to be on time. But Borno, we can't continue with your caravan.
You want us to leave you?
Borno glanced around the cave.
Here?
Yeah. Han said, also rising. We've got to find that painting. He glanced at Leia. Right? Right, Leia agreed. Borno looked doubtful.
Forgive me for saying so, but you are 100 kilometers from the nearest hut. The squibs have already claimed salvage rights on the sandcrawler.
He ignored the angry outburst this drew from the Jawa.
And they have no intention of giving you a ride, even if they do get it started. I'm sorry, but I do not think you humans will do very well walking.
We won't need to, Leia said. There are 2 hover scouts and plenty of spare parts from the sandcrawler lying around. I'm sure we can cobble something together. She glanced at Chewbacca. Can't we, Chewie? Chewie spread his arms and grunted. You see? Han said, stepping to Leia's side. We'll be fine. Have ourselves a look around, make a couple of repairs, and we'll be on our way home. Borno spread his hands in imitation of Chewbacca and grunted.
If that is your choice.
It is. Leia was about to tell Borno not to deny seeing them if the Imperials did find his caravan. Then a better idea occurred to her. Borno, how would you like a portable holocom? Borno's already narrow eyes diminished to slits.
What will I have to do for it?
Not much, Leia said. Just call the Imperials and tell them you left us back in the Great Chot after their tie frightened you, and you changed your mind about helping us.
Lie to Imperials?
Borno grinned hugely.
Nobody is better at that than Askagians.
Good. Leia explained her plan. Borno nodded.
I can do that.
He extended the arm holding the Jawa, drawing a hiss of pain from the little being.
We found this survivor hiding in a vaporator crate. I was hoping you could help him. He seems to have broken a leg.
Of course. Leia looked into the glowing eyes beneath the Jawa's hood. I'm no doctor, but I have field-dressed my share of wounds. I'll do what I can if you like.
Candelela, Ubani?
He wants to know how much it will cost.
C-3PO translated.
Oh. My apologies. She.
Leia smiled. It won't cost... I don't know, Han said, cutting her off. He made a show of examining the Jawa's leg, then turned to Leia and gave her his play-along-with-me look. That's a pretty serious break. Han, Leia said, how can you even think... She was interrupted when Chewbacca peered over her shoulder and agreed with Han that it was the worst break he had ever seen. C-3PO duly translated this into Jawa. C-3PO translated.
She says the break is not as serious as it looks. She will give you 3 ion blasters and not a power cell more.
Han and Chewbacca glanced at each other and shook their heads. And then, Leia understood. She peered at the leg and asked, What's that lump? It looks awfully big.
I can see my presence is no longer required here,
Borno said. He laid the Jawa on the ground, then tipped his many-jowled chin to Leia and the others.
I will be ready when you are.
I'll be along as soon as I'm finished here, Leia replied. The Jawa made another offer.
She can add a fine T-11 repeating blaster.
Any vidmaps? Leia asked. Borno still had theirs, having acquired it as payment for passage to the sandcrawler. We could use a vidmap. A working vidmap, Han clarified.
She has no vidmaps. But she can tell you how to find any place you're looking for.
Han scowled at this. Isn't this the sandcrawler that picked up that crash swoop a couple of nights ago? The Jawa nodded, then, through C-3PO, asked how he knew. Because I was following it, Han said, and you left me out in the storm. The Jawa chortled something that sounded like, uh-oh. The Jawa went into an elaborate explanation that, when C-3PO translated it, amounted to, no one in the clan understood the swoop either. Who flies a rocket-powered swoop around in the middle of a sandstorm? Kitster Banai had to have a death wish, or be crazy, or possibly be on the run from a hut. In any case, he was on a racing swoop, and racing swoops don't have vidmaps. Leia recalled that Ulda had made that old podracer pilot install one on Hans before selling it to them. But did Kitster survive? Did he have... The Jabba jabbered an interruption, which C-3PO repeated as...
Herot would like to remind you that you are currently in negotiations over the price of repairing her broken leg. If you wish to discuss the price of the information you are seeking, she would be glad to open those negotiations after you have completed the repair.
Why don't we trade straight across? Leia suggested. The information for the repair.
Tanda.
No.
You're holding back. Leia could hardly believe it. Leia met the Jawa's yellow gaze with new respect, then began to roll up her sleeves. Well, if a T-11 and 3 ion blasters are the best you have to offer, so be it. You get what you pay for in this galaxy.
The Tusken Raiders took them both,
C-3PO translated.
She can show you where to catch them.
Where can we catch the sand people?
After you have set the leg. She wants to be sure you don't try to change the terms again.
Okay, Leia said. That's fair. Chewbacca groaned and slapped his brow. Now you've done it. Han shook his head in frustration. We'll never get paid.
She says she is not that kind of Jawa,
C-3PO reported. Sure she isn't. Han rolled his eyes and winked at Chewbacca. You ever heard that one before?
Obani?
My goodness,
C-3PO gasped.
I don't think I should repeat that.
2 hours later, Leia and Han were 10 kilometers down the canyon, kneeling in the shadows of a small tributary gorge with the proper orientation to obtain a signal, watching the seconds pass on their chronometers, and waiting for Mon Mothma to come to the comm station in her private apartment. Most of the Askagian caravan had long ago vanished into the labyrinth of desert canyons, but Borno was 10 meters up the gorge, sitting astride his dewback and ready to take the transceiver. Chewbacca and C-3PO were waiting with Herat at the mouth of the little ravine, the repulsor lift engine of their captured Imperial hover scout still running. The squibs were, presumably, still back in the erosion cave, trying to bring the reactor core of their salvaged sandcrawler online, without the initializer core, that Han had found lying among a heap of debris strewn through the cavern by the Tusken Raiders. What part of hurry doesn't the chief counselor understand? Han asked. By now, Leia knew the duty officers aboard the Chimera's intelligence launch would be reporting a suspicious holonet transmission to their watch commander, possibly even Commander Quentin from the auction. About 5 minutes after the commander was notified, the first flight of TIEs would arrive and find Borno standing atop the rim of the canyon beside the holocom, waving them down. It would take perhaps another 15 minutes, 30 if the Solos were lucky, for an assault shuttle to arrive. If all went well, the company captain would believe the tale of contrition he found on the datapad Borno left behind and rush off into the middle of the Great Chott without even bothering to track down the caravan leader. If matters went horribly, Borno had promised he would not be taken alive, and Leia believed him, if for no other reason than his determination to keep secret the location of his village. Mon Mothma's image finally flickered into existence over the holocom, her hair disheveled and her eyes still heavy with sleep.
Leia, I'm sorry.
It's okay, Leia interrupted, but I'm transmitting hot. We have only 60 seconds before I have to shut down. Mon Mothma's expression grew suddenly more alert.
I understand. Have you recovered the painting?
Not yet, but neither have the Imperials, Leia said. And I have news about Wraith's mission. Local intelligence suggests that indigenous forces are already moving into position and can't be contacted. Repeat, they cannot be contacted.
Local intelligence? On Tatooine?
It's a long story and we don't have the time, Leia said. But I believe it to be reliable. The worry lines around Mon Mothma's mouth deepened.
Leia, after Luke passed along your report, I made the decision to recall the Wraiths. The order has already been coded. It goes out in 30 hours.
Can you cancel?
Not without the painting. We don't know how long it would take the Imperials to start cracking the codes with an old key.
But they would know about the network, Leia finished. And that might be enough.
You know what we would be risking.
Leia did. A Star Destroyer battle group, complete with Wedge Antilles, the Wraiths, and probably the Rogues and several other crack squadrons as well. I understand, she said, but give us the 30 hours.
Us?
Mon Mothma asked. Leia nodded. Han's on board with this. Mon Mothma smiled.
Tell him welcome back. The New Republic has missed him. And Leia, may the Force be with you.
Thanks. We're going to need it. For a change, Han felt pretty good about being on Tatooine. No price on his head, no hibernation sickness, no Jabba the Hutt. That alone made the place a sun planet paradise. He was at the wheel of an agile hover scout, flying all out through the heart of the Joondland wastes. The afternoon shadows just beginning to camouflage the boulders in the canyon bottom, and the prettiest woman in the galaxy clutching the crash bar beside him. Maybe Leia had been thinking about the same things, and about how she'd almost lost Han again, as well. She was constantly fussing over him, offering him water, checking to be certain he was cool enough, generally telling him she loved him in a thousand small ways. Almost as good as all the attention from Leia, Han had finally outsmarted the squibs. With the Sandcrawler's initializer core hidden in the speeder's cargo bay, Greece and his compatriots would still be in the cave, struggling to bring the reactor core online when Herat returned with her clanmates to bury their dead and reclaim their property. Now, Herat was guiding Han and the others through a labyrinth of deep canyons and narrow gorges, where it would prove difficult, practically impossible, for any spy satellite to find them. Their goal, the Jawa had explained, was an oasis deep in Tusken territory, a sacred ghost village on the far side of the mountains. An entire tribe of sand people had once been found dead there, hacked to pieces by an angry ghost, or so the sand people believed. Now all Tuskens stopped there to present gifts and make sacrifices before leaving the area. Herat assured them that the Sand People intended to offer Kitster and his painting to this ghost. All Han and Leia need to do to recover Killik Twilight was wait until the Tuskens departed, then walk down and get it. But if they wanted to save their friend, they would have to elude the Tusken sentries and sneak into the village without being killed. Assuming things went smoothly, Han thought they might be back aboard the Falcon by dawn, in plenty of time to report their success to Mon Mothma. They continued through the canyons for another hour, before Herat finally guided them into a narrow rising gulch, then climbed to a vast sand rock plateau painted in crimson and rust by the setting suns. Han stopped the air skimmer just within the gulch. I don't know about this, he said. It'd be pretty easy for an Imperial eye to spot us out there.
She says it's the only way, but we are a long way from the Great Chot, and there is no shortage of speeder traffic out here. At least two or three vehicles per week.
Han glanced over at Leia, who continued to clench the crash bar with one white-knuckled hand. What do you think? He asked. Yes, let's go out where you can drive really fast. She shook her head. Why are you asking me? I don't know where this ghost oasis is. She finally released the crash bar and activated the hover scout's onboard holomap. which instantly displayed the designator SSC-17 at the center. There were only three other designators on the map, one at the front of the display, showing six buildings labeled Settlement, one on Leia's side of the plateau, reading Hermitage, Abandoned, and a third on Han's side, near the rolling sands of the Great Dune Sea, marked Monastery/Palace, occupants unknown. Han pushed a finger into the holograph and stopped at the settlement. That the place, Herat? The Jawa answered, and C-3PO translated.
She says the oasis is beyond Wayfar, and more toward the old Kenobi place. Your bearing should be about a third.
Kenobi? Leia repeated. Obi-Wan Kenobi's? She hadn't realized they were so close. The Jawa shook her head and explained that it belonged to old Ben Kenobi.
She says he has been gone for quite some time, but I'm sure it's the same place. Master Luke made the same mistake when...
We get it, Goldenrod. Han moved his finger to the indicated place. That about right?
Obanin.
Herat chittled that it was. A stop at Obi-Wan's was out of the question. Leia knew that. With the Imperial searching for them, Kitster bound for sacrifice at the Ghost Village, and Wraith Squadron on the verge of being recalled from the Askage mission, they had no time for side trips. But she could not stop thinking about the Hermitage. Luke's journey as a Jedi had begun there, and he had told her once that he found it a good place to go to think matters through. The few times Leia had been there, she'd felt the same, and thinking matters through was something she was feeling an increasing need to do. The encounters with her father's old friends, her grandmother's diary, the visions or hallucinations or whatever they were, it was all too much to ignore. The Force was touching her in a way it never had before. Every hour of delay in reaching the oasis increased the likelihood that Kitster Banai would be sacrificed to the Ghost Spirit, and that the Imperials would find them again, and she would not endanger others while she tried to sort out her own jumbled feelings, no matter how powerfully she was beginning to feel she should. Besides, Leia had another way to explore her connection to this place and to her past. With Han finally steering a straight course, and three more hours before they reached the oasis, now seemed a good time to resume viewing her grandmother's journal.
21, 18, 16.
Today I came home to find Klieg Lars waiting on my stairs with a huge carton of produce from his farm. Pallies, a hubba gourd, blottles, pod poppers, even a bristle melon. He said prices were down in Mos Eisley, so he decided to try his luck up here. But I think he had another reason for coming. At least I hope so. He showed me how to burn the spines off the bristle melon, and we shared it for dinner. I don't know if I've ever tasted anything so sweet before.
What are you listening to? Han asked. Leia was glad to see that he kept his eyes focused through the windscreen, for night was falling, and they were flying along at a speed that only Han Solo could think was safe. That voice sounds vaguely familiar. It should, Leia answered. It belongs to Shmi Skywalker, my grandmother. Han peered over into Leia's lap.
Your what?
Leia explained the journal's significance and how she had come by it. Han shook his head in amazement.
That must be something, knowing who your grandmother is.
Leia did not miss the envy in Han's voice. He had no idea who either of his own grandmothers might be. He had been raised aboard a tramp freighter, with no knowledge of his real parents, and the closest thing he had ever known to a grandmother was Dulana.
20:08:17.
Klieg brought his son Owen up to help load some vaporators he was buying, though I suspect the vaporators were an excuse to introduce us. He could have bought them in Mos Eisley more easily. Owen's about your age, Annie, with his father's square face and blue eyes. He doesn't resemble the way I picture you, but it was impossible to look at him without thinking of you, and how you must be changing from the little boy I knew.
After that day, all hint of resentment seemed to vanish from Shmi's attitude toward her master. She cheerfully did everything Watto asked, sometimes even anticipating his requests, or tending to tasks he had not thought of himself. At least once a week, Shmi would return home to find Klieg waiting on her steps, with a box of produce from his moisture farm, occasionally even with a bouquet of hubba blossoms. It wasn't long before she gave him the security codes.
20-51-18.
While I was having my weekly drink with Watto today, he told me that my suitor had tried to buy me for a landspeeder. Watto seemed to think that I would be insulted that Klieg had not offered more, but I'm not. Watto doesn't understand how much a landspeeder is worth to a moisture farmer.
The next month went by quickly. Klieg tried several more times to buy Shmi, eventually offering much more than a slave of her age could be expected to bring. Instead of being angry with Watto for taking advantage of Klieg's feelings to drive up the price, Shmi seemed to accept the Toydarian's refusals with amused patience, as though she knew he would eventually yield. It seemed to Leia that Watto's behavior was closer to that of a jealous beau than an owner. He began to keep Shmi closer to him than ever, occasionally closing shop so he could take her on journeys to bid on Rex. Shmi told Watto that she wanted him to sell her to Klieg for a fair price. Watto told Shmi not to see Klieg anymore. Shmi reported that she laughed in his face. Soon after, she came home late to discover Klieg waiting in her hut for the second time in a week.
06-22-19.
I poured us some pally wine and made a light dinner. Then Klieg announced he had talked it over with Owen. They had decided to sell the moisture farm so they could buy me from Watto. And if Watto refused, they were going to swat him and use the money to buy us all passage off planet. I had to explain about the transmitter bomb again. Besides, it would take a lot more than the price of a moisture farm to make a miser like Watto sell his only friend. Klieg snorted when I called myself Watto's friend, but I am. I've grown fond of him over the years. And he misses you, Annie. That gives him a warm place in my heart. But I think Klieg is the one, Anakin. I've waited 5 years for someone I can trust, and now I know I've found him. I'm going to show him what Qui-Gon sent.
Over the next few weeks, Shmi was consumed with mysterious preparations, though never so much that she forgot her nightly affirmation of faith in Anakin's well-being. Leia asked for the next entry, and her grandmother's face appeared in the display, looking as radiant as a moon. Shmi began by whispering into the journal.
09-58-20.
Annie, we have completed our preparations. Owen is ready to play his part, and something special is about to happen. I know you will want to see it, and I'm so excited. I want a record of this too.
Shmi's face was replaced by the cluttered counter area in Watto's shop. The image was small and blurry, for the palm diary appeared to be sitting on a shelf some distance away. Several minutes passed, then a sandy-haired youth of about 15 came striding into Watto's shop. If this was Owen Lars, he could not have been dressed less like a moisture farmer's son. He wore a fine Temuan wool cloak over an immaculately tailored shimmer silk tunic with a new belt and boots of crate hide, a disguise that the greedy Watto seemed unable to look past. The Toydarian was on the youth like a skeeto on a dewback.
You are looking for something I can help you with.
It was not a question.
I have the finest merchandise in Mos Espa. Ask anyone.
I have.
The youth, undoubtedly Owen Lars, glanced around the shop, then picked up a set of infrared sensor goggles and examined them thoughtfully.
I may have been misled.
Owen reached for an expensive recording rod. Watto bit his tongue and allowed the young man to pick it up.
You are looking for personal recorders?
Owen turned and casually flipping the rod back and forth by its base said,
No.
A droid? I have the finest reconditioned droids in the city.
I was told on Nal Hutta that you actually have one of Renata Racing's old needle ships on your lot.
I do. Very well. We can take it for a test flight.
Watto's voice dropped.
I'm afraid we can't do that. It doesn't have the towball lens.
It doesn't have the towball lens?
Owen's astonishment sounded very convincing.
Then why are you trying to sell it to me?
I thought maybe you can get one yourself. They are not very expensive, but they're hard to come by out here.
Without the lens, it isn't worth a credit.
Owen's voice faded as he walked away. Shmi let him move out of earshot, then asked Watto.
A towball lens? Would that be an oval crystal about the size of my head, full of sparkling colors?
It might be.
Would it leave you blind for a time after you look at it?
Shmi asked.
And perhaps even scatter optical data if you bring it too close?
You've seen one. Where? Tell me before he gets away.
Klieg,
Shmi said.
Klieg? Your boyfriend Klieg?
Watto's voice grew disappointed again.
What would a moisture farmer be doing with a towball lens? He never owned a Renata needle ship, I think.
And where else would I have seen it?
Shmi asked. Watto was silent for a moment, then droned off yelling.
You, boy, wait!
Shmi laughed, then said quietly, Thank you, Qui-Gon. Eyes glued to the blue lines of the terrain scanner's heads-up display, Han angled the air skimmer across the desert floor on a new vector, automatically memorizing bearing, speed, and time, so he could calculate a new route to the oasis without activating the holomap. With the Imperials mounting a rescue operation, and the Tuskens watching them already, this could be harder than he had thought. Han finally found a deep ravine and slowed to a crawl, then ran back and forth around the rim several times to scare out any lurking creatures, and to draw the fire of any Tusken sentries camped nearby. When neither happened, he dropped into the ravine, parked them on the dark side of a huge boulder, and after a last glance around the moonlit crags, powered down all systems except the blaster turret.
Oh, this looks safe, Leia said. The Tuskens will never think to look down here.
Safe as our own bed back in Coruscant, Han replied. Why don't you play your grandmother's diary? I'm dying to know whether Watto fell for it. Leia activated the diary and held the display out. Han saw the desert-hardened, though still attractive, face of a chestnut-eyed woman who looked every bit as beautiful and dignified as he imagined Leia in 20 years. She spoke in a whisper.
16:04:21.
Now the bite, Annie. I feel... Well, I don't really know how I feel. My heart is pounding so hard, and my hands are trembling. I shouldn't feel guilty about cheating Watto, but I do. Or maybe I just feel sorry for him.
Shmi's face was replaced by the hazy image of a cluttered counter area. A few minutes later, a burly human farmer entered the frame carrying an energy-shielded cargo box. Shmi appeared in the display again and kissed him on the cheek. Then he set the box on the counter. A pot-bellied Toydarian fluttered out of the office behind the counter and went to the box.
This is it?
Watto's voice was barely audible.
Let me see.
He reached for the clasps, but the farmer, it had to be Klieg Lars, put his hand on the box.
Price first.
His voice was deep and easier to hear.
Then the lens. I only want to see the merchandise. You think I'm going to pay you a fortune for a closed box?
Terms first.
Terms? That lens was mine anyway. I know it was.
Watto turned to face Shmi.
That Jedi sent it to you. Do you think I'm stupid?
It belongs to Klieg now,
Shmi said.
If you want it, you must deal with him.
Watto turned back to Klieg.
All right, then. If the lens is real, and it fits in my ship, I'll give you a quarter of what I sell it for. You know what I want. It's not money. Shmi, you'd be better off taking the money. With that much, You can buy a dozen like her.
Klieg picked up the box and turned to leave.
Damn! She hasn't been such a good slave since she met you anyway.
Watto turned to Shmi.
You've wanted to go with him all along, haven't you?
Yes, I've told you that.
So you have.
Watto seemed to sag in the air. Then he glanced at his chronometer.
Let me see the lens. First you give me the deactivator wand,
Klieg said.
And tell me where the transmitter bomb is hidden. It's behind her jaw, on the left.
Watto touched his own chin to illustrate, then reached into his vest and produced a small electronic wand. All of the status lights were dark.
Here's the wand, but you won't need it. I deactivated her transmitter a long time ago.
What?
Shmi gasped.
When?
A few months after I lost the boy.
Watto turned away and looked as though he was wiping his eye.
The way you were moping around, I was afraid you would get yourself blown up.
You mean I could have left? Any time?
Watto shrugged.
But you didn't.
Watto passed the wand over to Klieg, then fluttered down to the box and reached for the lid clasps.
Watto,
Shmi called.
Wait him!
But Watto was already opening the box. A spray of iridescent light spilled out beneath the lid, and the diary display erupted into brilliant flashes of color. Watto's voice could barely be heard.
Hey! You've blinded me!
The entry dissolved into a white blur. The lens, Han surmised. I've heard about those. They were used to power the old Renata photon drives. They say a good Tobol lens could convert heat to light at close to 100% efficiency. Han turned to find the Wookiee pointing into the sky behind them, where the twin efflux needles of a nearby Tie were making a slow curve across the night. They watched in breathless silence as the needles vanished behind the wall of the ravine, then waited another 2 minutes for the Tie to return. When the sky remained dark, or at least free of Tie efflux, Han cautiously moved the air skimmer up to the gully rim. Anybody see anything? After 10 minutes of looking, they were finally convinced the Tie was gone. They emerged from the ravine, and Han started for the oasis again. They had traveled only a few minutes before Leia said, Han, maybe we should duck over to Obi-Wan's and give things a few hours to settle down. Han took a moment before answering, not trying to decide whether Leia was right, but wondering what had come over her. She was not the type to get her circuit shorted by a close call. Finally, he said, Kitster may not have a few hours, and your boss will be recalling the wraiths in 22 hours. Leia sighed, then nodded.
I know that. But there's something I really need to tell you. Since we came to Tatooine, I've been having, well, some Force experiences.
Force experiences? Like what? Waking up in midair? Talking to dewbacks? Accidentally moving sandcrawlers around with your mind?
Leia took a deep breath, then said, Visions. Sensations.
My wife has been seeing things? Han asked.
It's more complicated than that, Leia said. That dream I had on the way in system? It was Luke, wearing Darth Vader's mask. At least, I think it was Luke. Han began to worry.
But it was only a dream, right?
I've been having Force visions.
Let's talk about the oasis, Han said. You've seen something bad there?
This is more of a sensation, Leia said. Like going there now is a bad idea.
I could have told you that without the Force, Han said. But I don't see that we have any choice, or that things will settle down if we wait.
Chewbacca groaned his agreement, adding that the sooner they hit the oasis, the better Kitster's chances and theirs.
Chances of what? He did not say.
But Herat had a completely different idea, which C-3PO explained after the Jawas' long jabber.
Herat thinks it is incumbent upon you to turn around and help her reclaim her clan Sandcrawler from the Squibs, as your assurances that they would never activate the reactor core are obviously without merit.
Not a chance, Han said. How can she know it was her Sandcrawler that Tai was following? Leia asked.
Yeah, we are born again. Then there was a lot of lilies.
How many Sandcrawlers do you think such a small area can support? One.
Then we won't have any trouble finding it later, will we? Han retorted. He continued toward the oasis, troubled by what Leia had told them, but uncertain as to what else they could do. After a few minutes of travel, Leia seemed to decide that Han was right about the detour and resumed viewing her grandmother's diary. Focusing on the terrain scanner, Han listened with half an ear as Shmi described her hurried move to the Lars Moisture Farm. The next 6 months of entries were more sporadic and filled with data skips. But Han caught enough of the story to know that while Shmi loved both Pleeg and Owen deeply, she missed Anakin more every day.
20:07:22.
Annie, today your mother is a married woman. Pleeg waited until last month to ask me. I guess he wanted to be certain it was him I loved and not just freedom. It was a simple ceremony in Anchorhead. Owen came, of course, and a few of Cleeg and Owen's friends. Kitster, Wald, and Amy were there, and they asked about you. I wished you could have been there, but I know the Jedi wouldn't have allowed it, even if the message we sent had been accepted. And I understand. I truly do. I just wish you could have been there. Watto surprised us all by showing up uninvited. I thought he would make a scene when he saw Owen, but he just squinted and said, "You." Then he offered Cleeg a discount on used parts and told me that if times grew hard on the moisture farm, Wald wasn't doing such a good job as his assistant. He still hasn't found a buyer for the Renata Needleship, but he's asking 1,000,000 credits. Who does he think is going to buy it?
Shmi fell silent a moment, then continued.
Owen makes me miss you so much, Anakin. I can't look at him without thinking of you. Not that I see you when I look at him, that's not what I mean. Owen is strong, like his father. Pragmatic and certain of his ways. Grateful for simple joys and for his life on the moisture farm. Your eyes were always on the stars. Even as a young boy, you had to prove yourself to everyone you met, be the best at everything you did. To you, this wonderful place would have been a prison. But I love you both so very much. And I'm sure that if... No. When you and Owen finally meet someday, you will be great friends.
Leia shut off the journal and fell silent. When Han glanced over, her eyes were closed, her head tipped back as though her mind had retreated to some other world.
Mine, she whispered.
Yours? Leia's eyes snapped open, and she pointed into the darkness on her side of the air skimmer.
Turn here.
Turn? Han looked over.
Here?
Leia nodded and continued to look out over the dark desert. We have to stop at Obi-Wan's.
We talked about that.
Han continued on his current course.
The sooner we get there, the better.
Han, trust me. It was not a request. We have to stop at Obi-Wan's. We're not going to save Kitster or anyone else unless we do.
There's something there we need.
What? Han demanded. A spare lightsaber, Wookiee armor, assault artillery?
I don't know, Leia said. I have this feeling. I have to trust it.
Oh, a feeling. Han shook his head in surrender, then started the long swing toward Obi-Wan's.
Why didn't you say so?